Back-to-back meetings at the G7 summit in Cornwall yesterday saw Boris Johnson repeatedly told by EU leaders that Britain must keep its word and abide by the Northern Ireland Protocol. At the end of this month, restrictions on British-produced chilled meat entering Northern Ireland are due to come into force. The restrictions are part of a Brexit deal to protect the single market and avoid a hard border on the island of Ireland. But yesterday, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson toughened his approach to the dispute, saying that Britain will do whatever it takes to protect internal trade, including overriding the Northern Ireland Protocol. So despite the pressure on Boris Johnson from global leaders this weekend, has anything changed? That's a question I put to the Foreign Affairs Minister Simon Coveney when I spoke to him earlier.
Well, I think it's hard to judge that yet, but I certainly think that after the G7 meeting, the British Prime Minister will be in no doubt as to the strength of feeling within the EU and particularly from Washington as to the concern around disruption linked to non-implementation of the protocol to the peace process and to political stability in the island of Ireland. And so I think we do have to distinguish between what the Prime Minister says at a G7 summit, where clearly he is going to articulate the British view and the British government view in relation to the protocol and the concerns that they have, and what actually is likely to happen over the next few weeks. I mean, there's a number of things that I think are clear. First of all, I think the British Prime Minister will now understand very clearly that if Britain acts unilaterally again and breaches the protocol without actually getting agreement with the EU side, that I think there will be a consequence to that, and it'll be very problematic and will damage relationships even further.
What are those consequences, though, Minister? I mean, are we looking at a potential trade war then?
Well, I certainly hope not. I mean, Ireland isn't looking for a deterioration of the relationship. We're looking for the opposite. You know, and the Taoiseach has been very clear on this. I've been very clear on it. The Taoiseach has been very clear on it. We want to solve the problems that are preventing the protocol being implemented. We want flexibility on the EU side, but we also need partnership on the UK side. So there are mechanisms and there are structures to resolve problems that are linked to the protocol. There are proposals coming through from the EU side, some proposals coming through from the UK side as well. And what's needed now is the experienced negotiators on both sides to thrash out sensible flexibilities, to use pragmatism, but also to honour the commitments that both sides signed up to when they agreed the protocol.
Okay, and we'll talk about some of the possible solutions in a moment, but given some of the rhetoric we've seen over the weekend, I mean, you had Dominic Raab ratcheting up that rhetoric, accusing the EU of being bloody-minded and saying that the government will not allow the integrity of the UK to be threatened. There doesn't seem to be any sign of a compromise there, does there?
Well, I mean, look, I wouldn't read too much into that. I mean, I think that was for primarily a British audience. And the problem with Brexit over and over again for the last number of years is that often the rhetoric we get from the British government is very much about British politics, as opposed to trying to find a solution that the EU and the UK can decide together. And we've seen that over and over again at pinch points and points of real pressure and standoff with Brexit negotiations. And I hope we're not going to see a repeat of that in the context of the implementation of the protocol.
Okay.
I mean, the people who really matter here are, of course, the Prime Minister himself, who is very much involved in decisions linked to the protocol, because he knows that there is an international consequence to the choices that Britain makes in relation to following through on its commitments in a way that's consistent with international law. And then secondly, Lord Frost, who, of course, is the chief negotiator for the UK, but also is very close to the Prime Minister on all things Brexit. So that's why I was in London a week ago meeting Lord Frost to try to tease through some of the outstanding issues that are causing real problems. I think it is important that we all recognise that the impact of the politics of the protocol in Northern Ireland is very corrosive. It's polarising opinion. It's causing tensions between political parties and political leaders. But it's not just about political leaders. It's also causing tensions within communities in Northern Ireland because many see it as an unfair deal. And so there is a real management exercise here. First of all, to be honest with people in terms of what the protocol actually is and what the British government and the EU signed up for when they put it in place, because it's about managing and limiting the disruption of Brexit.
Are you saying people haven't been honest then with the people in relation to the protocol and the implications of it?
Well, I think many people in Northern Ireland have seen the implementation of the protocol in a way that they hadn't anticipated. And that was partly because the protocol hasn't been sold or explained to people in terms of its consequences in a way that is, you know, accurate and detailed. And then I think there are also elements of the protocol that people just hadn't expected or anticipated in terms of disruption to supply lines, our supply chains and so on. So we all have an onus to work with businesses, political leaders and community leaders in Northern Ireland to explain the context of the protocol. Because in my view, in the absence of the protocol, the disruption to business in Northern Ireland would be far, far more significant than with the implementation of the protocol. But having said that, there are elements of the protocol that people do find difficult to manage and in some cases find offensive. And so we have to be open to flexibility, yes, and pragmatism, but we've got to do that within the parameters of the protocol itself. And I think there are some people who seem to think that the protocol can simply be replaced by something else. And, you know, I've been involved in these negotiations for a number of years now. If there were easy alternatives to the protocol, we would have put them in place by now.
The US has put forward a possible solution around the alignment between the UK and the EU of rules around the movement of animal products, the so-called SPS rules. Does that provide the basis for a solution to this problem, in your view?
A partial solution, yes. So, you know, if we could get an agreement between the UK and the EU on maintaining common standards on phytosanitary standards, effectively, which is food standards, then we could reduce the number of checks in ports in Northern Ireland on goods coming from Great Britain by 80%. So that is a very significant prize. The problem with that, of course, is that what the EU has been asking for is a commitment from the UK to remain aligned to EU standards on food. And what the British government has been saying, no, we can't agree that because we can't be aligned to EU standards. And instead, what we want is the EU to recognise that UK standards are equivalent to EU standards. And so I think the challenge is to find a middle ground there. That is perhaps independently monitored, whereby the UK sign up to maintaining a common approach towards food standards with the EU. But I know that the UK government has a problem with that being enforced by the ECJ. And these are the kind of issues that we've got to try and find a way forward on politically.
But the prize is huge if we can do that, Justin. Yes.
Because if we can say to loyalist communities in Northern Ireland, to unionist communities in Northern Ireland, to business leaders in Northern Ireland, that we could reduce the number of checks on goods coming from GB into Northern Ireland by up to 80%. That is a prize worth fighting for, and that would be a significant improvement in terms of how the protocol is implemented in a way that reduces disruption. So that is why President Biden is very supportive of that approach.
Yes, and it's why the Irish government has also proposed it. That President Biden is suggesting this approach, and the implication here is that taking this approach wouldn't impact on a possible trade deal between the UK and the US. How generous an offer is that then from the American side?
I think it's a very generous offer, and it's an offer, to be honest with you, we asked them to make. So when Jake Sullivan, who is with President Biden at the G7, was flying through Shannon a few weeks ago, we had a very detailed discussion with him because he wanted to understand how could the US be helpful. Of course, they're a very close partner with the UK as well as a very close partner for Ireland. And so they want to be helpful here in a way that the British government may be able to support. And so by reassuring the UK that by putting in place an agreement that maintains a common standards towards food safety and animal health with the EU, that wouldn't undermine the capacity to get a trade deal with the US, I think is very helpful. In the meantime, the EU is also looking at progressing other solutions to other problems. So, for example, there's been a real concern, and we've heard it from Edwin Poots, for example, in recent weeks, in terms of the consistency of supply of medicines into Northern Ireland from GB, which is where they source a lot of their medicines. The EU has put in place a proposal there that can allow medicines to continue to be supplied from GB into Northern Ireland uninterrupted. So there is a real effort here to try to resolve political problems and practical problems on the ground.
Okay,
the UK side is showing
more
real
work
flexibility, but we need a partner. You know, like yeah. the one thing I'd say to finish on this, Justin, if I may, if the UK government decides that they are not willing to compromise and on the basis of a partnership approach, find a way to implement the protocol in a way that's pragmatic and flexible, and if instead they decide to simply unilaterally announce changes in terms of how they're going to implement it in Northern Ireland, that is going to be really problematic, and it's going to take this process backwards, not forwards. And I think that has got to be a very strong message coming from Dublin to London, that unilateral action when it comes to sensitive issues in Northern Ireland never works. The way in which we solve problems in Northern Ireland is always on the basis of Dublin and London working together. And in this case, it's got to be on the basis of London and the EU working together to try and find a pragmatic way forward where most people in Northern Ireland can accept the protocol as a sensible compromise to manage the disruption of Brexit.
Okay, I want to ask you about the demise of Stobart Air and the decision of Stobart to cease trading and what that means for our regional airports and our regional routes. Stobart operated the Dublin to Kerry and the Dublin to Donegal routes. Will those routes now be replaced and by which operator?
Well, look, I think it's, I mean, I know that that Aer Lingus regional service have taken over a number of the Stobart routes, but only a number of them. And that doesn't include Kerry and Donegal yet. But look, I can assure you, regional connectivity is really important to this government. We would have been putting a significant amount of taxpayers' money into subsidising the routes between Dublin and Kerry and Dublin and Donegal for good reason, to ensure that there is regional connectivity by air in all parts of the country. And that policy decision by government hasn't changed because of the really unfortunate circumstances around Stobart Air.
Are you confident that another operator can be found to operate those routes?
Oh, yes, I am. Absolutely. But it will require a conversation around the level of subsidy. So, I mean, there are no shortage of planes and operators right now.
Sure. And is the government willing to increase the subsidy so that those routes can be operational?
Well, I mean, I don't want to give a commitment on that. I mean, that'll be a matter for government and for the Minister for Transport, obviously in consultation with the government. But what I can say is that regional services and regional connectivity is very important to this government. And whether you're living in Kerry or living in Donegal, we want to make sure that you are connected, in particular to Dublin. Look, this has only happened a few days ago, but I do think the government will be working hard to try to replace those services as soon as we can.
Okay, and just finally, Minister, on the Delta variant, which is spreading widely in the UK, also in Northern Ireland, and there's concerns about it because it is in this country too. Is the government considering tighter restrictions on travellers coming from the UK to counteract the spread of the Delta variant here?
Yes, we are. And I spoke to Stephen Donnelly about this yesterday. I mean, we want to try to get the balance right between protecting the common travel area with the UK as best we can, because it's very important. And also, we need to take on board the very real and strong public health evidence.
What kind of restrictions are we talking about then, Minister?
So if I could just put a context around this, if I may, first. I mean, I was up in Lochearn in Northern Ireland for a British-Irish conference. And we heard from the First Minister, both in Scotland and in Wales, they are very concerned about the Delta variant, or many people might know it as the Indian variant. And so we need to do what we can to make sure, within reason, that we slow down the spread of that variant into Ireland at an absolute minimum, and do what we can to protect it. Obviously, I think people who are fully vaccinated are in a different category in the UK in terms of travelling to people who are not vaccinated, but you know the health minister will bring a recommendation to government. But I don't want to announce anything today. But just to say, we are looking at this seriously. I don't think you're going to see dramatic changes in terms of quarantine and travel, but certainly I think you will see some changes to reflect the concern and the danger that the Delta variant represents.
Some potential
in terms of spread into Ireland.
Potentially longer quarantine periods. Is that what you're looking at? That type of thing?
Potentially, yes, particularly for people who aren't vaccinated.